From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
For the fourth year in a row, the Beaver State Fling came down to a playoff. And one of the youngest up-and-coming players on tour took down his third event of the National Tour season. And that's where we're going to spend most of the week on PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Lamerson. Sarah, how are you? It's been, we're a couple days late in the show, so apologies to listeners. We had some travel stuff going on, but thank you for your patience. And Sarah, how's it going?
Pretty good. I spent my weekend in Philly. It was kind of cold there, actually, unseasonably cold, but it seemed like it was kind of cold and rainy out in Portland, too. How was that?
You know what? Like, it really could have been worse. It was rainy and it was Portland. But it was Portland. It wasn't like terrible, like torrentials. We did like get some thunder at one point. And we were watching the lightning meter, but everything was good on that front. But otherwise, it was a great weekend out for the Beaver State Fling. We're going to talk about that today. We're also going to take a look at the other hot rounds from the PDGA this weekend. And we're going to talk about the board of directors candidacies that were just announced today. But the main gist of the show today, all about Beaver State, all about Milo MacIver State Park. Sarah, I messaged you over the weekend that you need to come to this event next year. It's one of those things where everyone tells you how amazing this place is. It's such a bummer because it doesn't come across on film or photo as much. You literally just have to experience it. It's just one of the most amazing places I've ever been. I'm a total Portland fanboy as it is anyway. It's like my favorite city in the world. Like, yeah. Between all the good food and everything there and just the general vibe and culture. And then you add this amazing disc golf playground out there at Milo MacIver with these massive trees and a river flowing alongside it. Everything's green and beautiful, well manicured. It was amazing. So huge, huge thank you to Jeff Middle and Jeff Haggerty, the co-TDs there, and their amazing staff for holding everything down and putting on another great National Tour event. We are so lucky to have this event on the National Tour. It's so, so special. So really, really pumped and just feeling very fortunate that I was able to get up there this week. So, and on top of that, we got to see some great disc golf. We got Eagle McMahon taking down his third NT, Sarah.
Yes, I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, you're pretty excited about that because you picked him to win.
Yeah,
I mean, we talked about this earlier. Like, once they started, they were going to come in bunches, and that's what it's been for him. And then Katrina Allen gets off the schneid for the season and wins her first big tournament of the year. And I think we should talk about that first because it came down to a playoff again. You know, Beaver State always gives us playoffs, and this was like a total flashback to 2016. It was Katrina Allen and Paige Pierce in a one-hole playoff, and you can't ask for much more excitement than that. Sarah, did you get a chance to kind of go back and look at the last like back nine leading into the playoff, like that whole sequence of events?
I only got to watch, let's see, from the women's coverage, I watched all of round two when that came out, and then I ended up watching, I think, holes 17 and 18 and the playoff of the last round. So I didn't get the build up as much because I didn't get a chance to watch the entire back nine. I need to go back and watch it. But yeah, I mean, what were your thoughts being actually there and watching this whole thing go down? Were you like, give us the play by play? Like, how were you thinking that Paige was going to take it, or were you confident that Kat had it?
No, I mean, like, it was it's just crazy because, you know, back in 2016, it was kind of the opposite, where Katrina, I believe, had a 5-stroke lead going into the final round, and then Paige ran her down in the final round, tied it, and then Kat won in the playoff. This was like the reverse version. Katrina had a 3-stroke deficit going in. She worked that back throughout the round. I mean, earlier in the round, you thought Paige had it in hand. And then down the stretch late, you know, things kind of went off the rails a little bit for Paige. Like, there were some putting issues again. I don't want to say questionable, but I'll just say it. There was a questionable decision on her approach on hole 18, and you know, we can sit here and armchair quarterback that, which we're going to, but If you look at Paige Pierce's final round, she her circle one putting percentage was 71%, and that absolutely came back to bite her, especially late on 18. And Katrina, on the other hand, you know, she didn't putt lights out herself. She only putted 86%. Although she's marked down for a two putt on hole 18, and that first putt was like circle's edge and back against a bunch of bushes. So I don't know. That one's ticky tack.
Well,
against me.
Hole 18, I don't know. Is it just completely flat? It's very hard to tell on the
footage.
Yeah,
it's flat.
It's a 509-foot par three. Like, that's a pretty good, if you're getting there for a three. That's
well, right, right,
pretty good.
No, I'm just saying I didn't think she actually two putted in that one, is what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
I would have classified her first putt as more out of circle one. But
right,
So basically what happened though is, I mean, Katrina went birdie, and you know, bogey to par, double bogey, and tied it up in the last three holes. And really, the biggest shot of the tournament to me, was Katrina's drive on hole 17. She laid down a roller to go underneath this low canopy, and she said that was actually kind of a deviation from what she will normally do. She'll normally go like a low hyzer flip line, but she wasn't feeling confident in that shot because of the rain. And so she had practiced the roller, she'd parked it in practice, went back to it, and parked it again. And I was really impressed with her confidence in going back to that shot and having something else in her back pocket there when she needed it. I think that was a really, really big moment, because it was like, all right, she had birdied 16, but Paige still had a couple strokes to play with. And then Katrina comes out and threw down the gauntlet with that roller, essentially. And, you know, but then she steps up to the tee on 18, throws another roller, because in round two, she had cleared the corner on that 500-footer that you mentioned. She cleared the corner and was looking pretty good for an up-and-down three. This time, she goes in on the right side early, and you're like, ah, crap, it's probably over.
Yeah, that's a rough approach from there, too. It's like just pure turnover putter mid-range.
Yeah, like she was going
Anheuser.
Patent-pending stance, like really difficult shot. But then, so the big discussion point here, Sarah, that I want to ask you is this. Paige Pierce, after she's second on the box, after seeing Katrina go OB, or not OB, sorry, into the rough and have a tough approach, Paige does the same thing and goes with the roller. And I'm guessing that she probably threw that in round two. And Paige is an aggressive player, and we know that. But I want to ask you, Sarah, was that the right decision? Paige Pierce is playing with a one-shot lead. She sees Katrina go into the bushes. She still throws the roller. Do you think she should have played it differently?
I think there's a couple things that could potentially be at play here. Maybe, and I don't know what her mindset is, but maybe she was like, well, Katrina's roller didn't work, so I'm going to one-up her. I doubt it was like that personal, but maybe it was like, well, I know that I can get there with my roller, and I'm going to just be aggressive and try it versus just try an air shot. And it didn't work. I mean, maybe she saw the error in what Kat did and tried to correct it and just try to get down there, and unfortunately it didn't work for her. But maybe... And that's kind of why I was asking if there was any elevation change, because
maybe slightly uphill, but
okay.
No, not really. No,
I was going to say, you know, Paige can bomb. Okay. Paige can bomb, as we know, but to get there in two is maybe not probable.
She didn't need to get there in two at that point. Like, at that point, there's no way Katrina Allen's doing better than a three there, after going into the bushes, and Paige already has a stroke. So what I'm thinking is, like, there's no OB on this hole. There's really, I mean, there's some danger on the left side, but it's way down there and it's way off to the left. Like, she would have to have a huge skip or a crazy early release or something like that. And then, you know, you saw Val and Vanessa Van Dyken on the same card throw up just nice flex line, safe drives, but that just went plenty long. And we're safe. And I'm just wondering if you're Paige Pierce, are you kicking yourself for not doing that? Even if the roller had been your gameplay in the whole tournament, when's the time to make the decision and say, look, I've got the win in hand here if I just play a safe shot?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, I'm a ridiculously safe player, and I'm not throwing a roller unless I'm really deep in the stuff. So that probably wouldn't be an option that I would go for. I'm always safety first, but you really can't. It's hard to tell what was going through her mind as such an aggressive player and who goes
Sure.
for everything. I don't know. It'd be interesting to ask her
I know, and
if
I
that's.
didn't get to talk to her. I wanted to. She wasn't
Yeah. Well, you want to
super
give her
up for it, which is
some
fine.
time after
Yeah,
that too, not like,
exactly.
hey.
Exactly. And I'm more than
But
fine to do
yeah,
that. But I'd be curious
every
to talk
player's
to her.
mindset's like, yeah, and every player's mindset's totally different. She's really aggressive and she's known for going for everything.
Yeah.
And a lot of players aren't, and so their mentality is completely different going into that hole. So maybe she's thinking of that one shot as like the reason that she didn't win the tournament, but I mean, that's just one shot.
Right. And
If
it's
she had been
and
playing,
yeah, and
and so many disc golfers do that, they're like, oh man, if I made that putt, I would have won. It's like, no, it's cumulative. Like, it wasn't that just that one putt, it was a bunch of other things throughout your four rounds
right.
that didn't set you apart from the rest of the field. So that's a tough lesson to learn.
No, and
And
I think
just
that's
to
a good
stop like kicking yourself for
I
one
think
shot when it's totally cumulative.
And I think that's a good point to bring up. We know Paige doesn't lay up, like her mentality most of the time is no laying up, but we also have seen her lay up in times where she has it in the bag. So I just found it to be a curious process. And I'm
Yeah.
looking forward to like kind of picking her brain about that a little bit. I know it sounds like we're seeing here, armchair quarterbacking, but I guess that's kind of what we got to do on this show. Like when there's things to
Yeah.
talk about like that, like the decision-making process during a final round is fascinating. And so
Yeah.
I was just I'm really curious to know what she was thinking. But to your point about it being cumulative and you can't blame it on just one shot, if we want to look at really the biggest issue for Paige Pierce this tournament, it was putting. Really off and on. Like, and it was raining, things were slippery. Like you saw players putting down beach towels on the tee pads. It was insane.
Yeah.
But, round one, circle one putting, 94%. Good stuff. She two putted the first hole of the tournament, was clean after that. Round two, 86% circle one putting, three putted three times. Not terrible. Round three, back to 94%, only one two putt. And then round four, final round, when she goes into it with the lead, she two putted one, two, three, four, five, six, seven times and
Ooh.
dropped down to
Yeah,
70,
see.
71% circle one putting. And then normally she's hits one or two more from outside the circle. She only cashed in one during that round. She hit a couple in round three, but usually she's a little more. You can count on a couple more from outside the circle. But circle two for the whole tournament, she threw in one in round one that didn't count as circle two. It was from like 75 feet, but she only had
Yeah.
like one or two from circle's edge or from outside the circle, which normally she can make up a couple strokes that way too.
Yeah. I don't know. So that was definitely something that was going on with her. But so one more note on the going for it and the thought process. This kind of always sticks with me is USDGC Johnny McRae, hole 17. Just go. I was there and I was just like,
Oh
oh
gosh.
my God. It was painful. But so I went out to dinner that night and he ended up being at the same restaurant. And one of the people that I was with went over to him and was like, dude, like, why didn't you just lay up? Like, why didn't you just play it safe? And he was like, honestly, it didn't even cross my mind. Like, so
Yeah.
that's how people who go for it, who are really aggressive players, I mean, that's how they think. So maybe she was like, I practiced this roller. She had no other thoughts when she stepped on that tee other than I practiced this roller. It worked for me in practice in round two, and I'm going to do it again. And she did it and just didn't execute it correctly. So.
That could be, and I think that circles back again to how impressive it was to see Katrina Allen deviate on hole 17.
Yeah,
She
for
wasn't
sure.
comfortable with her shot in the rain. She had another shot in the bag. I mean, to have that kind of versatility, it's great. And honestly, like as much as we're focusing a lot on Paige and her decision making here, like it's really great, I think, for the women's side of the sport to honestly like see Paige Pierce not win for two big events in a row. I think
Yeah.
it's a good thing, and I'm not. This is no knock on Paige Pierce. She's still far and away the best women's player in the field. But at some point, you do need a little bit more like competition. We've seen that on the men's side now. You know, for the last couple of years, it was either Paul or it was Ricky or it was Ricky and Paul, and now we've got a bunch more guys contending.
Yep.
And so to have a little more competition, I think, is a good thing. And it's great to have Katrina Allen back. I think this was just the kind of tournament she needed. You know, she's real comfortable in Portland. She's won three Beaver States now, I think. And
she's won Worlds two there. Two Beaver States, 2012 and 2016. And okay, then so the then Worlds
she,
there.
And
yeah.
I think she might have won a U.S. Women's there. She's won four times, I believe, in the Portland area. So, I mean, she just has this extra comfort level. And for someone who'd been struggling a little bit, admittedly, earlier in the season, great to see her get back on track.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
Sarah, let's take a break real fast, and then let's come back and let's talk about all the excitement from the men's division, and then we'll roll through the rest of the show. So we'll be right back in just a moment here on PDGA Radio. So the men's side at the Beaver State playing, we had another win for Eagle McMahon, third NT of the season. He's now 3-for-4 in the national tour this year. He's first in the NT points standings. Sarah, here's my big question after this event. Is Eagle McMahon, can we now call him the best player on tour?
I mean, the stats don't lie, so it's so hard to say. I don't know.
You're very agnostic about this, aren't you?
I am.
All right, well, you mentioned stats don't lie, so I wanted to bring some to the table, and then maybe I'll bring all this to you, and then we'll backtrack. So if we're looking, obviously the top two consensus players for the last however many years now, 2, 3, 4 years, have been Paul McBeth and Ricky Wysocki, okay? Those are the ones that Eagle is being compared with, rightfully so. And those are the guys that we're picking every week. Those are the guys that everyone else is picking every week, you know, except for you because you picked Eagle this week. Congratulations. I'll give you that again. So looking at this from the beginning of the 2018 season, when each player started their season, Ricky Wysocki has played 36 rounds, and his average round rating is 1039.556. So 1039.5, which is actually like 10 points below his player. Is his player rating 1049, I think, right now?
It's right around. You have done way more math homework than I have.
I know, right? Well, I didn't look at his actual player rating. I can type it up.
His player rating right now is 1046.
Oh, it's gone down to 1046. Okay, yeah. So that bears that out because his average rating is 1039. He started the season at 1049 or 1050. So he's trended downward a little bit early this year. I think we haven't been seeing him putt quite as well as
he started at 1050. It's only 4 points. It's not that bad.
I didn't say it was bad, but it's a slight downward trend, and see that in when you look at his average round rating. And in terms of number of wins, I mean, we were surprised that it took him until Jonesboro to win this season, right? So that was Paul McBeth is still at 1048. I think he maybe started the season at 1049 or 1050, and you know, people always want to talk about, oh, is McBeth done, blah, 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 and he's not.
no.
But his average round rating over 39 rounds is 1040.974. So let's just round up 1041. So we've got Ricky at 1039.5, Paul at 1041, and Eagle McMahon has played the fewest amount of rounds out of the three of them, only 34 rounds, and he is averaging 1048.676, so basically 1049. So he's averaging almost 10 points higher than Ricky and about 8 points higher than Paul through the whole year. He has more wins than both of those guys, I believe, this season, or at least higher profile wins. No, I think Paul might have more wins on a pure numbers standpoint.
Okay.
But, Eagle has arguably higher profile finishes, higher profile wins. I think his average finishing place is probably better. McBeth's logged a couple of double-digit finishes, which we're not necessarily used to seeing. You know, Ricky, I don't remember what his low finish is this year. Ricky's low finish is 13th, so he's got a double-digit finish. So the next part of this is, like, what determines who's the best player on tour? Like, Is it your own personal metric? Is it the stats? Is it a feeling of this player is
really
being...
cool?
Well, no. Well, oh, yeah.
I'm
well,
just kidding.
I mean, sure.
Coolness points definitely weigh in here. I'm just kidding. Wait, no, what about you're obviously you have a bunch of tabs open that I don't on the PGA website. What about money? Not that that really determines.
No,
anything,
no, no. Oh, that's a great question.
Comparison.
I didn't do all three for the money, but I can do that real fast. But just to give you a sense, we talked about, you know, Paul has 3 double digit finishes. Ricky has 1. Eagle's lowest finish is 7th place. His average finish has got to be about a 2 or so. Money wise, Eagle has made $23,240.
Okay. I'm on Macbeth's page.
Okay, Ricky,
give
you Ricky. Ricky's at 18,438. And what's at Macbeth?
He's at 17,275.
So from money and ratings.
Yeah.
And national tour points. Eagle McMahon is the best player on tour right now.
I guess so.
Can anyone argue that?
I guess I'm just squeamish about superlatives.
Oh, but that's what we... Well, I get that. And then the other part of it is like, okay, well, I mean, if you want to get into the contrarian or whoever's going to argue it, is like, okay, well, yeah, he's the best right now, but over the last 4 years, it's been Macbeth, or over the last 2 years, it's been... There's going to be people who still think that Eagle has to prove himself.
But if you want to say the 2018 season, then it's clearly Eagle.
It's the year of the Eagle right now.
Yes. It has yes. to
be. All right.
It well, is. That was, yeah. All know, right.
Superlatives. Like, we got to do it sometimes. So I personally like, and it's just the interesting thing is too, and we talked about this last time Eagle won when he won at GBO, is just the different ways that he's found to win. You know, this one, again, he didn't come into the final round in the lead and held it. He came from behind and just kind of played it slow and steady. And then when he needed to, he put a shot on the island on hole 12 that literally hit the pin.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And was able to take that shot when he needed to. Very similar to what he did at the GBO. He's figured out when the moment calls for something big and hasn't let those moments get too big for him. And it's been really exciting to watch. And so this kind of dovetails in what else I want to talk about. We're gonna bring up three other things from each division, observations that we have. So I'm just gonna parlay this into what mine is. My first one out of the NPO division, Drew Gibson and Garrett Gerthy continue to have really strong seasons. We've seen them both get top fives a bunch of times, final round lead cards. I want to know, what's it gonna take for these guys to get a big win? Sarah, what are your thoughts on when we're gonna see one from Double G or Drew Gibson?
So I didn't watch a whole lot of the men's coverage, but I don't know. I think both of them are right on the verge, and it's really exciting for me because when I first started playing like 10 years ago, Double G was a big name in the disc golf world. And it's really cool that he's come back and has been a huge competitor. And it's like, he lost no steam whatsoever. I don't know how much practicing he did in the off season.
It's amazing, his
extended off season.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really cool. I'd love to see him get a win. I'm not familiar enough with either of their stats to see like where their deficits are.
Sure.
It sounds like you did a lot more mathing.
No, I mean, I didn't do any mathing. I didn't do any mathing on these guys.
Okay.
I would say just from observation alone, the biggest thing for Drew right now is I think there's a big difference in mentality between him and Eagle. And like, some people motivate themselves in different ways. Don't get me wrong. And Drew, even I talked to him about this a little bit. You know, he's one of those guys who like, he'll be like sarcastic or yell at himself a little bit. Be like, oh, great shot, buddy. Like to himself. And
yeah,
you don't hear, and it, but it comes off as kind of negative sometimes. And Simon does that to a degree sometimes as well. Eagle doesn't really do that. I even asked Eagle about that, and he's like, yeah, you know, he's like, some, like, those guys do that, and it's no knock on them, but like, I operate in a different way, like, because I don't know that getting down on myself or being my own worst critic the whole round is as productive as it could be. I'm
Eagle
paraphrasing.
Eagle just seems like he's found his zen on the
course.
It's pretty cool.
Drew has, and I really hope that he does, because once he does, like, it's going to be on at the top of the men's division. Like, it will be so hard to tell who's going to win every week, because Drew Gibson has all the tools necessary. He can absolutely crush. His long range putting has come in together. He's a strong, strong player, but he just he hasn't flipped that switch like Eagle has, like on the mental game, I think.
Yeah, it sounds so. Just from the coverage that I watched for this event and for SFO, it just seems like he makes more mental mistakes, and his putting kind of suffers from that. So I think if he can clean that up and just, I don't know, recover a little bit better, then
yeah,
I think he'd be a little bit stronger. But Garrett Gerthy, I guess I haven't seen him play as much on footage this year. It's putting for him. Okay.
It's putting for him, and he'll even tell you the same thing. Like, and he's got the ability. Like, he's putting it inside circle two all the time. I mean, because he smashes. And so, like, if he can convert on some of those long range putts, which he's started to do, so he's throwing. And I hesitate to, like, we're not really supposed to get into like disc manufacturers and stuff too much on the show, but like, I bring this one up because I don't know that there's anyone else on tour really using this disc. He is throwing approaches with an Innova Sonic.
Yep.
And he is throwing them into the basket all the time. Like, he had two or three throw-ins from 40 or 50 feet in the final round. He had one from like 80 the round before that. And it's like just such an old school mold that I wanted to bring it up because I just thought it was amazing. Like, you don't hear people throwing that disc very often, but it works for him. And so if he can get some of those, like, keep doing those shots, and then also just his circle one putting, you know, he had a couple that he missed. He was 88% in the final round. For the tournament, I mean, he's 94% in circle one for the tournament. For the 2018 season, where is he on circle one? He's down to 88 in circle one. So, I mean, that's a huge discrepancy right there. He's 86th on tour in circle one putting. If he could start to land, just be a little more consistent up in that 90%, 92% range in the circle, I think we're going to see him breakthrough.
So, yeah, I hope so. And I hope they come out with a signature Sonic, because I would probably get one. I've seen some things on Reddit.
Yeah, there's been I've heard that might be a thing. So we'll see. Second big thing out of the MPO division, Kevin Jones, my boy, is still doing things.
Your boy crush.
You know what? I told him he was okay with it. came in third, tied for third place at this event, bested his career national tour finish, which was at the GBO earlier this year. He continues to impress. I think he's another one of those guys who's going to be that we're going to see a special performance sooner than later. It's just because I think he already has the mentality. I think with him, it's just gaining the consistency. And then the third thing out of the men's division, Paul Ulibarri, tied for second place.
Yeah. Like,
it was a return to form for him. He took the week off from San Francisco. I was kind of surprised when I was sitting at home before getting ready to go to San Francisco, and up on my Facebook feed pops Paul Ulibarri riding a skateboard at the Sholo, Arizona skate park.
I did see that too.
I thought it was hilarious. I was like, oh, I guess he's not in San Francisco. But he went home for the week, worked in the field, apparently did a little skateboarding. Cool. And because he went to Masters Cup and was not throwing well and was not happy with how he was playing. And he's the kind of guy who he'll do that. If he's not playing well, he'll go home, refresh, hit the field, take a couple weeks off. And that resulted in a second place finish this week. He almost pushed this thing to a playoff. He had a really bad luck on hole 16. And I was just really impressed that he was able to bounce back from a rough showing in Santa Cruz, take just a week or two off, and come back and do second place at this event.
Yeah, I think that shows a lot of maturity and that he's introspective about his game.
He like, totally is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. And even though he's not a weekend warrior, he's a full-on touring pro, he's like, you know what, I just need to take a couple weeks or a week and just get back to what I know and then go out and try again. I think that he made a really interesting Facebook post about that.
I was just going to mention that. Yeah, for anyone who wants to see how introspective he really is, you can check out his Facebook page. He had a really nice post that a couple of the players shared around too.
I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, so. A lot of wisdom.
Yep.
And then, Sarah, you've got three big things from the FPO division that you enjoyed from the weekend. What do you got?
Yeah. So we talked about Katrina Allen quite a bit, obviously, but I was just kind of wondering why this course suited her so well, and not playing the course and not really seeing her play, I can only kind of assume a couple things. And she's really good at shaping shots, and it seems like these two courses require that. There are tons, you know, is it the East course that starts out with those two huge turnover shots?
Yes.
That are kind of blind? Yeah.
Yes.
So not everyone can do that with a lot of comfort. So being able to just like put your disc on a line totally blind and trust that it's going to get down there takes a lot of practice and a lot of skill. And, you know, she's got forehand, backhand, she's really good at rollers. And it just seems like she knows how to shape her shots around this course using various shots. So
yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I had a good conversation with her about that. And she said that's exactly why it is that she does well at these courses. You know, she came in when she started playing disc golf, she came in and said to herself, you know, I don't want to ever go to a course and think that I don't have an answer for something or don't have a
shot. That's awesome. Yeah.
So she's developed her game to that point, and she's like, yeah, out at these courses, I'm throwing sidearms, I'm throwing rollers, I'm throwing sidearm rollers. So like there's a little bit of everything there, and I think it does play. She does have one of the more well-rounded games on the FPO side. I mean, you don't see I can't remember the last time I saw Paige Pierce throw a flick. I mean, she'll occasionally do it for an upshot, but she doesn't have a forehand off the tee or anything like that. Sarah Hokum, forehand dominant. You know, there's a couple players like Jessica Weiss and maybe Lisa Fagas who switch it up a little more, but like as far as the upper tier between that top three or four of Paige, Kat, Val, and Sarah Hokum, I would say that in terms of the variety of shots, I think Katrina has the most at her disposal.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I was thinking about that. I didn't write it down to talk about, but when I was watching some of the footage of Sarah Hokum, I noticed that on some of the holes, she was forced to throw a backhand.
She
doesn't seem entirely comfortable with that, so she was kind of cutting it off early, hyzering out too early. So I don't know if it was disc choice or discomfort, whatever, but I think that really hurt her this weekend too. So I'm sure she has realized that and knows what she needs to work on. I can't imagine going from being completely forehand dominant and then trying to throw a backhand. That would seem very uncomfortable. I mean, it's uncomfortable for me to try my forehand.
Well, that's like all these people who like get hurt and then start throwing lefty. I mean, I throw lefty and I've tried to throw righty, and it's like it feels just,
I can't imagine,
completely foreign. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the second thing I had, I was very happy to see that Vanessa Van Dyken had the lead after the first round.
Yeah.
She's a good friend of mine. We played AM Worlds together several years back. And yeah, I'm always just kind of rooting for her from the sideline. So I was super excited. She was the only female to shoot under par that first round. It's too much for me to look at the stats right now. But were there any other under par rounds after that you know of?
I believe, I don't know. I'll look while you come up with your other big thing.
Okay. So that was very exciting. And she finished pretty strong too. She stayed up in the mix. She ended up finishing tied for fourth with Sarah Hokum. She left a few out there kind of.
Yeah.
I guess her third round, her last round, she shot a 900 rated round.
Yeah, I think she was struggling a little bit the last round. To answer your question, Katrina Allen and Nicole Bradley both went one under round two. So that would have been at the West course. So
yeah.
Vanessa was the only under par women's round at the East course.
That's awesome.
And I saw her out there on Saturday when it was like the worst weather. Mm-hmm. And granted, it helped because she was having a good round and had jumped back up. But like, she was out there smiling the whole time. She was having a great time.
Awesome.
I think she's just truly happy to be back on tour and healthy. And you know, it's just awesome. I mean, she's a legit competitor in the women's division.
Yep, and I agree.
We need more of that. So
I agree. Yeah.
And then go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I'm hoping to see her up there more, and I'll be seeing her at some of the later NTs this year and at Worlds. So I'm excited to play with her again. And then I mentioned last week that I was looking forward to Elaine King coming out for one of her first big events this year.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised about three people that didn't cash. because I thought that this kind of course would lend well to their games. And that was Jessica Weiss, Elaine King, and Madison Walker. They all shot, I didn't do the math, but it seemed like they all shot on average under their rating. And I was just kind of surprised by that because Elaine King, her game is so consistent. And she just kind of throws in the middle again,
right.
puts her disc under the basket, and then putts. Like, so I'm kind of surprised that she didn't do as well on these courses.
Yeah, I mean, with the weather, I think that was probably a factor. It becomes more of an endurance race, and that goes the same for how Madison and Jessica played too. It's hard to kind of keep your wits about you when the weather is that poor.
Yeah, it's true.
And if you're talking about players who didn't cash, I mean, there were only 78 players in the men's field. So, I mean, there were quite a few, known men's players who didn't cash. I mean, you're looking at Joel Freeman didn't cash. Will Schustrick didn't cash. Eric Oakley.
Nate Perkins.
A lot of players didn't cash this week. So it was,
Jeremy Colling.
That was one thing. First round, he was last after the first round.
Ooh.
I think he shot, let me pull it up. I want to say his rating was like 936.
938. Yeah.
938 rated first round. He really struggled. And yeah, you know what though? I saw him later and I even said, I was like, dude, what happened? He's like, you know what? First, I've just never played well on the West course. He's like, I was kind of sick. That doesn't really excuse things. I just don't play well on the West course. I've got 12 rounds there in my career, and I've never played well there. So, but I mean, he battled back the rest of the time. He went 10-09, 9-94, 10-40 final round. And the thing about him is he never looked like he was really, and granted, I didn't see him during that first round when things probably weren't going great. But like when I saw him the other times, he didn't seem like he was down. He didn't seem like he was in a bad mood. He was out there and he was still seemed to be enjoying himself. So I think that's what you can take the most out of that. And I doubt we see an anomaly like that out of him the rest of the year.
Yeah. Well, that's all I've got. I have a lot more footage that I need to catch up on, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, speaking of footage to catch up on, we should give a shout out to Empowered Disc Golf. This is it's a YouTube channel and Facebook page and things like that from a girl named Alex Chavez. And she was out there at the Beaver State Fling this weekend following around the women's rounds the whole time. And she actually got footage of every woman in the FPO field and put together a compilation. It's pretty great. You can go check it out at Empowered Disc Golf on YouTube, or we actually shared the link on the PDGA Facebook page.
Nice.
You know, everyone's always talking about, hey, you know, I mean, I shouldn't say everyone's always talking about, but one of the common refrains in the discussion of how to get more women's coverage is, you know, you get some people who are like, oh, well, you know, we need some women's crews to come out there. Like, it's the easiest thing on the planet. You just snap your fingers and make it work.
Hey, pay me, just kidding. I would rather be, if I was coming out to Portland, I'd rather be playing than filming, but
sure. But
either way,
this is how that starts. It starts with steps like this. So I have to give a huge shout out to Alex. She was out there the whole time. She's apparently going to have round footage of rounds three and four coming as well.
Awesome.
I'm not sure which card. She was kind of floating around the whole time, but if you truly are one of those people who wants to support women's disc golf, go out, subscribe to her channel, check it out. She's doing really good things. Sarah, I guess without further ado, we should look at the hot rounds from the PDGA over the weekend. Most of them were at Beaver State.
Yep.
Shockingly. But why don't you start on the FPO side where they were all from Beaver State?
Yes, they were. So the hottest round, actually, the first two hottest rounds were both Katrina Allen. Her first hottest round was rated 993. It was her fourth round. And as we know, she finished first place. And her second hot round was a 991, her round, second round. Tied with that 991 was Nicole Bradley during her second round, and she finished sixth. Vanessa Van Dyken shot a 985 for the third hottest round.
Yeah, that was that opening round we talked
about. Yeah, yep, that first round, and she ended up tying for fourth. Paige Pierce shot a 983 her second round and finished second. And then Sarah Hokum rounding out the top five with a 976 rated first round, and she tied for fourth with Vanessa.
Awesome. And
Pretty
over on the
hot.
yeah
yeah
over on the men's side, hottest round of the weekend, Garrett Gerthy, 1074 rated, third round at Beaver State. He had back-to-back eagles.
Oh my gosh.
He eagled the hole at Philo Albatross with like an 80-foot throw-in, and Ugh. Then parked hole 7, which is like a I'm going to look at the footage right now for distance-wise. That's on hole, that's on the west course. It's a 587-footer, 587-foot par 4.
And he parked it?
And he apparently parked it.
No way.
For 2. There's no footage of that.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
He literally... No, I'm sorry. This says he... No, yeah, this says he did park it. Well, wait, but it says he parked it, but then it also says he threw in from 49 feet. I don't know. Either way, someone... Whoever's taking the stats for that one. Either way, he put it to within 50 feet on a 587-foot peninsula hole.
That's
He's
sick.
A stud. It yeah. is. So he came in with the hottest round there. Next two hottest rounds came from Chandler Fry and Sepopayu. It was their third round. They both came in at 1066 ratings. Chandler Fry tied for 5th and qualified for USDGC in the process. So congratulations to Chandler.
Awesome.
And then Seppo came in 10th place. Drew Gibson's second rated round was clocked in at 1059. He tied for 5th, and that was tied for... actually, that was tied with Paul McBeth's second round. And then a round from Jacob Henson, who played at the Kansas City Wide Open. Jacob Henson was also on the winning National Collegiate Disc Golf team this year. And he was
oh,
one of
yeah.
the people I talked to who was going to be going out on tour a little bit.
I thought
he's
I recognized that
not,
name.
Yeah, he's not at Beaver State, but he won the Kansas City Wide Open this weekend, which
awesome.
Was an A tier. So shout out to Jacob. Congratulations. First place and hitting the hot rounds list this weekend. And the last, gosh, we have more. Jeez. 1058.
There's lots
was,
of ties.
There were a lot of ties. So fourth hottest rated round was 1058. That came from Simon Lazat, Noah Meinsma, and Philo Brathwaite, all during the third round at Beaver State. Simon tied for 5th, Noah tied for 27th, and Philo tied for 13th. And then the last round was from Matt Bell, who was signed up for Beaver State. And the first round magically wasn't there because he was at Steady Ed's birthday bash in Lakeport, California, shooting a 1057 rated third round and winning that event. So
nice.
That is all the hot rounds for the weekend. And let's see. I think we have one more thing on the list. Oh, gosh, the picks. We have to update the picks, I guess, so Sarah can
brag. You totally wanted to skip it this week. I know.
I'm just trying to keep the show going, Sarah. I'm just trying to keep it moving on track. No, you're smoking me now. There's not much I can say about it, but you did quite well. For those who maybe didn't listen last week or don't remember, Sarah correctly picked Eagle McMahon to win the event. She also got Simon Lazat finishing in the top 5. So she racked up all the points possible in the men's division. I only took 6 points in the men's division with Ricky Wysocki tying for 5th and Paul McBeth finishing in 11th. He was my top 5 lock, so I didn't get that. So she got 9 points on me there. I made up a couple in the women's division by having Paige Pierce come in 2nd. Neither of us picked the correct women's division winner.
I know. I feel terrible.
Yeah, you picked
I
Val.
I feel bad that she didn't. I know. I feel bad that I didn't even pick Kat for top 5.
Well, and honestly, that was lack of. Ugh. That was we were. That was dumb. We were being dumb. Because
oh, totally dumb.
Because
she took second last. She took second last
well,
week.
Well, and you look at how often like, she's won there. Like
I know.
We were being.
Sorry, Kat.
Sorry,
Kat. If you're listening.
We'll apologize. She's supposed to come on the show next week. We'll be sure
okay.
to mea culpa. So anyway, you got 7 points there. I got 12 points. So Sarah beat me by 4 points on the whole this week, but she is up in the season-long points battle by 23 now. She has 190. I have 167. But we've still got some more events to go. Got to chase you down a little bit.
Yes.
We'll see
we
what
will
happens.
See. We'll
so,
see.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break, and when we come back, we will check out who is going to be running for the PDGA Board of Directors. So we'll be back here on PDGA Radio in just a moment. Let's wrap things up here on PDGA Radio this week. Sarah, the PDGA Board of Directors elections start in July, and right now, at this very moment, while you have headphones on in your ears, people who are listening, you should go to PDGA.com, and right on the front page, it says, Meet the 2018 PDGA Board of Directors candidates. If you want to have your voice heard as a PDGA member, This is where you can do that by voting for new board of directors candidates. And you can learn about all these people. Sarah, I know there's six members right now who have thrown their hat in the ring. We're not going to get too far. We can't like stump for any of them. We'll probably have some of them, if not all of them, on the show at some point throughout the election process. But I mean, what are your thoughts when you're looking? What are you looking for in a new board of directors candidate? I know I put you on the spot there.
I know. Way to go. I don't know. Experience and dedication and passion around the sport. I don't need someone. I'm not impressed by letters after your name kind of thing. But if you show that you have done a lot of volunteer work and other, just have been involved in all facets of the sport for quite a while, then that's more important to me than like, I have a whatever degree and something that doesn't relate to disc golf.
What if it's someone who hasn't necessarily been in the sport that long, but they still have a lot of passion? Like that's the interesting thing for me, is seeing people who maybe are newer to the sport and have come in and have latched onto it. Like,
yeah.
So it's interesting. I think it's good to have a balance.
I'm not against that at all. And definitely, I mean, we've been saying this, I don't know if you and I have been saying this, but I say this in my normal conversations, is that it's nice to have people out of the sport, sponsored out of the sport, that kind of bring a whole new element to our little sport. So I don't know. There's a lot of reading to do here.
There
and
is
maybe
a
I
lot
can
of
give
reading.
You, maybe I can, and there's some fun videos too out there. So if you don't want to read an entire bio, everybody, there are videos, I believe, for some of the candidates.
Most of the candidates put out videos. But yeah, and I would recommend, take some time. Like, this is a chance for you to learn about these people, and there you can probably contact all of them even on their PDG. I think there's a way. But I mean, yeah, this is a chance where you can either, you know, sit and just vote for a name on a piece of paper, or you can get educated and learn about these people and figure out what they want to bring to the table and if they align with your values as a disc golfer. So
yeah,
highly encourage everyone to do that. Again, it's on the front page of PGA.com. It might have gotten pushed back behind this radio program, but otherwise it'll be there. No excuses. Go learn about the candidates, and hopefully we'll have some of them on the show. One more thing, that speaking of don't be lazy and go do it.
Yes.
He says to the guy who hasn't done it
yet.
I was busy.
Hey, I was in Philly Portland. While the entire time you were in Portland. Just saying.
Were you?
But what?
Anyway.
But what he's talking about is our is our monthly. So we just launched our first monthly challenge giveaway, and it's the PDGA Radio Challenge. And what we're asking our listeners to do is go for a cardio or speed round, running round, whatever you want to call it, and take a picture or video and post it to Instagram and use the hashtag PDGA Radio Challenge. And I was just, you know, taking a gander on Instagram today, and I noticed that there were two videos so far.
And who are they from?
They're from me.
They're from Sarah. And if you want to get a little bit maybe seasick in watching them, you might get a little seasick because they went the GoPro route. And I'm not,
yes.
You guys
so
did a great job with it.
We're pretty high tech. Yeah. And it was one of our slower rounds because the woods are very thick at Cedar Hill here in Nashville. So we lost a couple. Well, so we brought one disc with us and we had to turn the camera off a couple times while we searched for it.
Oh my God.
But it's a 35 minute round. And I think I got the full video down to like 6 minutes on YouTube. And I posted some shorter clips on Instagram. So if you'd like to see that, you can go out and find the hashtag PDGARadioChallenge.com. But you can just take a picture.
Yeah.
And post it. Simple
picture
as that.
Or your GPS thing or your Fitbit stats or whatever. Or, you know, take a selfie of you and tell us that you're going to do it. And it'll be great. But have fun with it. And hopefully next week we see some more. Maybe we need to like challenge some of the pro players to do it. I bet some of them would do it.
Oh, I'm sure. Even if it's just like, you don't have to do an entire round. You could do like a three hole challenge with your friends and see who shoots the hottest speed round at the lowest time. And you can do all sorts of challenges.
Oh, there
but,
you go.
Yeah. But at the end of the month, we'll look at the hashtags on Instagram. We'll select a random person, and they will win a sweet prize. Yeah. To be determined.
Definitely. So, should be fun. So, yeah. Again, it's hashtag PDGA Radio Challenge on Instagram. And, Sarah, I think that's it for this week. It'll be kind of quiet. We don't really have a big event this weekend. We can kind of just, you know, recover from Portland a little more and look ahead. We've got, like, all of the World Championships coming up now. We've got juniors and masters and AMs and pro worlds finally, and it's going to be a busy summer, so let's catch our breath while we can. And
I've got my first A tier coming up this weekend in Birmingham. It's the Magic City Mega Bowl, so there's actually some pretty big names coming out for that on the MPO side. So
do you want to do bonus picks?
We could
bonus picks.
Let's see.
Now I gotta find the event and see who's coming.
Magic City Mega Bowl. Love the name.
That is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not sponsored by anyone?
Oh, yes. Magic City Mega Bowl, sponsored by Dynamic Discs. Oh,
okay. That's not that bad. I was hoping for something longer. Okay, so
we've got picks.
Well, I guess technically it's you. You can have you get first pick.
Okay. I thought, didn't I get first pick last time? Or I didn't?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So if you're listening and want to see who all is signed up for this tournament, I'll read a few names off. Chris Dickerson, Matt Oram, Cam Colglazer, Zach Melton, Emerson Keith, Zoe Lutz, Colin Forehand, Matt Dollar, and so on and so on. There are 32 open men, 6 women. There's a lots of age protected and AMs too. So
we got tee times up. Love it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
On it. All right. Who you got?
Professional. I'm going to go with Chris Dickerson. That's right. easy choice.
What about the women's division?
I can't.
Just kidding.
That would be so unfair. I'm not going to pick myself. And if I pick somebody else, then how would that look?
Oh, fine. We won't you pick the women's division. No, it's fine. I'm going to go with my fellow lefty, Mr. Zachary Melton.
I was going to pick him. I'm sorry,
Zach. He's been playing real well lately. He qualified for USDGC this week as well.
I saw that. Congrats.
Yeah. Hopefully
his back is still holding up well. I saw he had some back issues going into the rounds this past weekend.
Man,
so yeah.
Well, hopefully he'll play well. But that's a good. This is your classic like southern regional dudes at this event.
Yeah.
Like, those are the guys there who are generally. You know, who I'm surprised to not see here is like Josh Childs. I would have been.
I don't know.
He's usually at a lot of these events.
I know. Anyway. I'm seeing him.
Yeah, he's
strange.
He can play it. So, all right. Well, we'll talk about that when we come back next week on PDGA Radio. And if you have any feedback, hit us up, radio@pdga.com. You can always tweet at us too, @PDGA. I monitor the account. So you can always get at us there and, you know, let us know what you think of the show. We hope you're enjoying it. So, Sarah, good luck this weekend out at Magic City.
Thank you.
All right, and until next week, that was Sarah Lamerson. I'm Steve Hill. We'll see you next time on PDGA Radio.